This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie.
I still don't believe that.
I'm never going to believe it. Hey, but guess what we've got? Something completely believable.
Is it curable?
Well, no, I don't think so. Once this gets into your system, you're done.
Yep, pretty much.
We have Rick Young here from NASA.
NASA
is awesome.
Good.
Anyway, you've got a special project you're working on.
Yeah, something we've never even heard of.
Yeah, it's HiCam. What is that? HiCam, you know? Yeah.
That's right. So my name is Rick Young. HiCam stands for High Rate Composite Aircraft Manufacturing.
Okay.
It's a new project formulated in 2022 with the goal of developing high rate production of composite structures, large composite structures for single aisle transport aircraft.
When you say high rate, I mean, are we talking about trying like half the time it takes to build these structures, or?
We're trying to build them about 6 times faster than current technology.
Okay, well, we can only speed up chemistry so much, right?
Yeah, so it's a couple of things. There's scale up of the production system, but also faster processing and faster assembly. So we are right now something like the 787 or the A350 or the A220. Their maximum production rate is about 14 aircraft per month, but for a single aisle replacement, there's an industry request, I guess, to be able to produce 80 aircraft per month.
Oh my goodness, that's quite a jump.
So it's faster material placement, but also faster curing processes.
Okay.
Getting out of the autoclave, which is a high pressure oven.
Right.
That cures parts for up to 8 hours. We're trying to get that out into an oven and get cure times down to like 3 hours. Or using closed tools for isothermal cures, you know, so that you can basically get time on tool reduced. Mm-hmm. And a lot greater automation. But it's also it's fabrication of the part, but it's also movement of the part through the factory, inspection, assembly, and be able to move the aircraft basically through the factory faster.
Okay, so you're looking at every single process involved in manufacturing and trying to speed it up.
Yeah, we started out with modeling the manufacturing system based upon the current production system and then looked at how we could modify it and then made assumptions on what we would try to achieve in each station in order to get the parts through the stations faster. And that reduces the number of stations needed in order to basically produce parts.
Okay, so your ultimate envision is a vending machine where I put in my credit card and I push 737 and one pops out, right?
Yeah, it's sort of a moving assembly or a pulse line type of approach where they're basically moving tools and parts in a steady flow through a factory.
Yeah, more like a car manufacturer.
That's correct. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the
just
problems,
a lot bigger.
One of the problems that you're facing are the curing times that are used in the composites. How can you speed up something that takes 8 hours to cure to make it 3 hours cure and still maintain structural integrity?
Well, we're taking three different approaches right now. There's basically something that's sort of an evolutionary approach where they're using traditional thermosets but using faster cure resin. So they're trying to reduce the autoclave cure cycle to a shorter, like maybe half the time. It's just a change in the formulation, and they're trying to basically optimize that process.
So, yeah, that's total materials change.
That's correct. A second approach is using something like a resin infusion system where they're putting dry fiber in a closed mold where the mold is heated and injecting it with a thermoset resin, and they can cure that out in the mold in a much shorter period of time so that it reduces the processing time to get it into the part, you know, as far as the bagging and, you know, time to go into an autoclave. But by using an isothermal mold, they don't have the heat up and cool down cycle. They can basically get the material in, get it set up quickly, and get it out of the part in a much shorter period of time, on the order of 3 hours.
Now, have you guys tried any of these processes yet?
Yeah, some of the resin infusion technology has been evolved, but they're having to accelerate it. Right now, a lot of things we're doing, we can do today, but it's just slow. And so they're doing tweaking and reformulation of the materials in order to get basically a faster cure. And an isothermal cure is the idea where they can basically use a tool that's at temperature, inject it, and get the part out without heating up and cooling down the tool. I was going to mention the third approach is using thermoplastics. We've not used thermoplastics in large primary structures before, but that's a completely different formulation where you're melting the material and then letting it cool. And that process can happen very quickly.
Right. You just got to make sure that your ambient environmental temperatures don't reach that transition temperature of the material.
That's correct. And the transition temperatures are still high, but you're taking now that material, we're heating up to a much higher temperature than a traditional cure.
Right. So you're not going to 350, you're going to 500 or 600.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, is if you make material changes in the materials, now you've got to completely re-engineer everything because you're going from a known process into an unknown process. You've got to do a tremendous amount of testing, I would think.
You have to start over.
Yeah, basically, ground up.
Yeah, what we're finding is the processes are changing, but the material, the end product, really isn't changing that much. We're still getting the same quality and quantity characteristics in the composites that was originally there. So we're taking advantage of basically the legacy learning and the design technology and trying to produce something that's equivalent but producing it much faster.
The one technology sounds a lot like just a standard injection molding, except you've preloaded the mold with fibers.
That's correct.
So you got all those issues where you got to make sure you get all the air bubbles out and get good fill.
Yeah, low volume. I'm sorry, low porosity.
Right.
Getting equal wet out everywhere. So it's a real production challenge. I can tell you from the work we're doing now and looking at some of our early efforts, it is going to be challenging. The things that we're doing now, there's a lot of learning that's occurring, and so we're trying to do a lot in a short period of time. We're trying to develop these technologies for the next aircraft, which could be entered into service in the early 2030s. So we're trying to go from small scale to large scale demonstration by 2028.
So you're going to get one of these giant trees with all the little parts on. You have to break them off and trim them with a knife and glue them together.
Yeah, like an Airfix kit or an Aurora kit.
Just a really big one. And look, I got a 747.
Yeah,
that's an incredible undertaking.
Yeah, it is. I don't think it's to me, when we approach this, I view this as a tremendous challenge to not only introduce these materials, but get them to the point where we're comfortable in qualifying them for the next aircraft and being able to design with them, with these new material characteristics.
So I guess the qualification is not unlike what you did when composites first came out.
That's correct.
So.
Yeah, we're not changing the certification process in that regard. We still have to meet the same standards that we currently meet.
Now, we all know that human beings are absolutely perfect and that we never prang airplanes on the ground, in the air. But what about repairability of these composite structures? What's that? Are you looking into how these new materials and new processes are going to affect repairs?
Yeah, it's a requirement for anything that we bring forward. Again, some of the final forms are not that much different. And for example, if we resin infuse, it still is in the end a thermoset fiber reinforced plastic, so it can be repaired using the same approach that we're taking previously. Thermoplastics present a new challenge because of the different material characteristics
right.
and processing,
and because of the heat required to flow them and all that.
That's correct. And so they're part of our development is also looking at the repairability aspects of that, for
okay.
bonded repairs or bolted repairs.
So I imagine, where are you in this process? Have you gotten to the point where you're actually making parts and evaluating it?
We are. We're in the first phase of the project. We're making parts at a relatively small scale, up to like a 2-foot by 2-foot panel right now, and trying to evaluate three different manufacturing approaches. Even within those, each approach, there's also variants as far as different ways of processing the material. They're being studied, and at the end of 2024, we'll be down-selecting technologies for them taking to large-scale demonstrations.
That's an interesting word, down-selecting. You mean you're eliminating the ones that don't work?
That's correct, and actually what we're learning now is probably going to be a hybrid solution, in the sense that there are certain techniques that will work good for certain subcomponents. Other techniques will work better for larger components, and so we'll pick the technology that works best for each component and then have to consider the assembly.
Right.
Implications of that.
And then you'll move into larger parts?
That's correct.
And I assume you're working with some aircraft manufacturers?
That's correct. We've got we formed a consortium. We've got currently 20 companies, including NASA and the FAA in that 20, who are working collaboratively, assembling multi-party teams to basically cost-share research to determine the best approaches. We've got companies that are actually looking at all three approaches, not really competing against each other. They're competing the approaches to determine which ones are best.
What about testing of these products? What kind of non-destructive testing are you doing with them?
I hope they're doing destructive testing.
Well,
I want to know the ultimate limits.
Eventually they will, but they're going to do NDT on them first, then destroy them, hopefully.
Yeah, we're doing sort of the traditional non-destructive evaluation. We also have bringing forward sort of automated inspection techniques for in-situ monitoring of the processing itself, but then also robotic automation of the final product inspection, and then also a lot of testing to determine and secure the structural strength characteristics.
Right, right. I mean, the ultrasonic inspection says it looks good, but you really need to break it to see how good it is.
What about X-ray? Will you be using X-ray techniques as well?
Yeah, we are using X-ray CT in order to characterize, and we're using that to help us understand what we need to be able to find during sort of more rapid inspection during the production process.
Like porosity. You got to be able to spot that reliably.
Yeah, fiber waviness and different, because again, it's more likely we're going to see different types of features when we produce at high rate.
Well, you know, that brings to mind the question, when you're injection molding a part with fibers, you don't want the fibers to shift when that material hits it. So I guess you got to design your molds to take that into account.
Yeah, there's a lot of pre-consolidation. They'll take those dry fibers, but they're also sort of infused with a sort of a thermoplastic powder or a scrim cloth, where they then compress it under heat and pressure in order to form it into the shape they want it to be before they put it in the mold. So it's a tight fiber form. So when it's injected, it's got just enough room for the matrix to infuse without things moving around a lot.
Right, right. You don't shift the fibers.
You're talking about fibers. What kind of fibers are you going to be using? Will it be Kevlar, fiberglass, carbon fiber?
Most everything we're doing is carbon fiber. It's like an IM8, like an intermediate modulus, so it's a higher performing fiber than the previous generation to help reduce weight. But it's carbon unidirectional fiber in different forms, either in unidirectional fiber or fabricated into weaves.
Okay. Well, Rick, I want to thank you for joining us. Rick Young from NASA. You're over in the NASA building.
Yes, sir.
Which is an Aviation Gateway Park, I think.
That's correct.
Okay. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EAA Radio.
All right. Thank you.